From APM in New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and this is Marketplace Money. Retirement. It's that thing we all know we should think about. When you start your working life, it can feel so far away, or maybe unattainable, like you'll never be able to save enough. Retirement can be scary, a reminder of mortality even. But it's part of the American dream. Living comfortably after you leave the workforce, doing the things you've always wanted to do. Today, we're balancing practical and personal with a guide to retirement, and we asked a few people to daydream a bit.
Oh, my dream retirement would probably be a house in Texas, an apartment in Manhattan, a house in Malibu, and to be somehow helping the world.
Teaching somewhere part-time, maybe living close to a beach.
My dream retirement would involve a lot of tennis playing and novel writing, if I can come up with my stories.
I would like to retire in Costa Rica at a place called Estancia, because I studied there one summer, and a lot of Americans actually end up retiring there, and it's fairly cheap.
My dream retirement would be the ability to travel multiple times in a given year, provide for my children, help them set up with their first homes.
Hopefully, I'll be able to get a place down in Florida and move to an over 55 community and just kind of relax. Right now, I do have a 401k, not a whole lot in it. I waited till about 3 or 4 years ago when I realized I wasn't going to live forever, and I didn't want to work till I was 90. So I've started putting money away, and hope it'll be enough when I get there, because I don't know how much Social Security is going to be.
Oceans, travel, a second career, plus 401ks and Social Security? There's nothing quite like retirement planning for a unique blend of math and magical thinking. We imagine everything will work out fine, that the money we invest will grow and will be there when we need it. For the next hour, we'll take a realistic look at investment choices, what works for different ages and lifestyles, whether you should pay off a mortgage before you retire, how to play catch-up if you haven't socked away money since you were 22. Yeah, that includes a lot of us. But first, this. Who we are affects how we decide to use our retirement dollars. That's what Suzanne Hsu studies. She's an assistant professor at UCLA's Anderson School of Management. Suzanne, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to be here.
You have studied how retirees basically make financial choices. Tell me what you've learned. What do we choose?
Financial choices for retirees are incredibly complex. And so we look at some of the elements of that complexity. What we study and what we've learned is that some of the psychological biases that influence a lot of other decisions that people make, especially self-control type decisions like take dieting or saving for retirement, things where you really have to work hard and think about those long-term implications, some of those same biases pop up in the retirement decisions that people are making, including things like when to claim their Social Security benefits.
I want to ask you about Social Security because this is such a fascinating thing. Americans are eligible to start collecting Social Security at 62. Is that a good idea? What should they do?
Claiming at 62 is officially defined as early claiming. Financial implications of doing that really work out in a way that you are economically better off by waiting. And remember that those trade-offs are calculated based on the average American's mortality. If you can beat the average lifespan of an American, if you're someone who's in good shape and you eat well, then you definitely come out ahead by waiting. So generally, for the average person, waiting until at least 65 or 66 and maybe even till 70, if you look at the economic models, a lot of the advice is to spend down whatever retirement savings you have. And of course, not everybody has a lot of retirement savings, but if you have it, it makes financial sense to spend some of that down before you take the Social Security.
Explain that to me. How much more money do you get if you do it at 70 versus 62?
So if you claim at 62, there's really a pretty significant penalty. I think it's about 25% of the full retirement age. And then there's a benefit built in if you can wait past the full retirement age until 70.
But there's a psychological component to this, which is, I don't know if I'm going to live that long. I don't know what's going to happen to me in the future. Why not take the money now?
with Social Security claiming, when the opportunity comes up at 62 to start claiming, there's a lot of psychological factors that start coming in. You start thinking, well, I've worked my entire life contributing into the system. I deserve these benefits. It's like I own these benefits. They're mine and I want them now. There's also a concern of what we'd call loss aversion, this fear that I'm going to die earlier than I think, I'm going to die earlier than the average, and if I haven't claimed, I've lost out somehow, and so I better claim now while I have the chance. Those psychological biases we find are some of the strongest predictors at the individual level of individuals who want to claim early versus waiting until full retirement age or even claiming late.
I'm 37. When I look into the future, I kind of think, I don't know if Social Security is going to be there for me. I don't know if that has any relevance to my life. What do you think is going to be out there?
It's a question of the payments coming in from younger workers being able to cover the outflow for older workers. I think a lot of people walk around almost thinking of it as their own personal defined contribution plan, kind of like a 401k. I put money in from my paycheck every month. It goes into some bucket somewhere. And at the end, that's the money I'm going to get
out.
I'm
going to get it, yeah.
When they talk about concerns about what's going to happen to Social Security, the estimates I've seen say that under the worst case, then young workers might be putting in about 75% of what's needed to cover the older workers. And really, I think what that means from a policy and political standpoint is that the government at that point will find other sources to make up that 25-cent difference for every dollar paid out. You know, this is one of the most popular programs in the country. I seriously doubt that any politician wants to go down the path of being the one who stopped paying Social Security.
Suzanne Hsu is an assistant professor at the UCLA Anderson School of Management. Thank you.
Thank you.
Look out now into your imaginary future. Whatever you see yourself doing in retirement. Fishing, spending time with your grandkids, or just relaxing. Reality is, it takes money and a dedicated financial plan. We asked Liz Weston to answer your questions about retirement funds, how to save, what accounts to use, and how to think about planning. She's a personal finance columnist and author. Liz, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Lizzie.
First off, I want to start with this study that says two-thirds of Americans aren't saving enough for a comfortable retirement. Why aren't we doing that? What's wrong with us?
Well, clearly they're not listening to Marketplace Money, because we've been telling you for years, come on, people. There's a couple things going on. One is obviously people are still recovering from the recession. So they're trying to make up for lost ground, trying to pay off that debt. They don't realize that retirement has to be their top priority, that you really can't put it off. The other thing that's going on is that wonderful human optimism we have that somehow something is going to come along and save us. Well, what I'm worried about is these people are going to hit retirement and they're facing what's called a cliff retirement, which means their lifestyle is going to fall off a cliff.
Hmm.
By that time, it's too late. You know, by the time you get into your 50s and 60s, it's going to get really, really hard to catch up, if you even can. So it's really important for people to get an early start. But unfortunately, that message, I guess, is just not getting through.
And getting through early enough.
Yeah, that's the thing. We got to get those people in their 20s. Come on, guys, get that 401k started. There's a free match most of the time. You're getting a tax break. Just do it. Yes, you have other priorities, but you got to make retirement first.
All right, let's get our first caller on the line. She's Diana, and she is in Colorado. Diana, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, how old you are, and how much you're saving for retirement. Just give us an overall financial picture.
Well, I'm 49, and so far I have $35,000 in retirement. The reason why partially is because I lost quite a bit of income from 2008 to 2012 with the loss of my husband and then caring for and then subsequently losing my mother.
Mm. Oh, I'm so sorry. What's your income picture right now? Are you working?
Well, I was working at a medical device company on a contractual basis, conducting some data mining, but the contract ended last week.
So you are looking at kind of no income right now and this question of looking ahead toward the future. Let me just ask you one question before we get Liz's advice. What do you see your retirement being like? What's your perfect retirement?
working part-time and focusing more on my hobbies or in volunteering.
Okay. All right. Well, Liz, what are your thoughts for Diana right now?
Well, obviously, it's if you don't have any income coming in, it's going to be really tough to save, let alone to catch up for all those lost years. When did you lose your husband? How long ago was that?
2008.
Okay. So that's still relatively recent. That hasn't been a long time. Was he a pretty good earner?
Yes.
Okay. One thing you've really got going for you, which will be helpful in retirement, is that you can get benefits based on his earnings record. It's called survivor benefits. And if you wait till your own full retirement age, which is going to be somewhere between 66 and 67, you can get a very nice sum of money. It's essentially 100% of what he would have gotten. So it's a nice benefit for Social Security. So that's something to look forward to. The thing is, though, really, when you're behind in retirement savings, you have to plan to work longer. There's just no way around it. And I love the fact that you're willing to work part-time in retirement. But really, the priority now needs to be landing that next job and putting aside every penny you can. You're kind of the sandwich generation, taking care of your mom. And I know that puts you behind. A lot of people lose a lot of money caretaking older relatives. So you do have time to start, you know, building up that fund, but you really need to get going as soon as you can.
Diana, let me ask you one question. You said you have hobbies that you'd like to spend some time devoting yourself to. Are any of those places where you might be able to find part-time work as well?
Well, actually, I make my own homemade root beer.
Oh, I love root beer.
And I've had over 250 people taste my root beer just at potlucks, barbecues, parties, etc., and not one person has said they didn't like it.
Oh, okay. That sounds interesting. It's something you could do on the side, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Once you land that full-time gig, it's always good to think about multiple income streams. You don't want to be too dependent on one source of income. And that's true as you're working. It's also true in retirement. You want to develop those early. And I'm really glad you're thinking about this stuff now, because a lot of people don't even think about it until they're a few years from retirement. And then they'll go, okay, what am I going to do now?
Diana, thank you so much for joining us. We wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking my call.
Of course. Good luck.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Just ahead, Liz Weston and I will answer more of your retirement questions, including one that struck a nerve.
Is this advisor detailing your car and doing your taxes and making your estate plan?
No, but probably should be, right?
How to think about management fees. That's coming up on Marketplace Money from APM. This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. My guest this hour is personal finance columnist Liz Weston. We're taking your questions about retirement, when to start saving, how to save more, and how to know when you've saved enough. Liz, before we get back to the phones, I want to read you a question we got online. One person writing into us wanted to know, this is Deborah, should she pay off her student debt first or start a retirement account first? This is something a lot of young people, or really anyone who's working right now, wonders about. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's actually a slam dunk. Start that retirement account. I mean, you do have to pay your debt. You can't ignore it. But the fact is that there's no better time to start saving for retirement than in your 20s. You have decades ahead of you for that money to grow. If it's not in there, earning those compounded returns, you know, you're not going to get to the place where you can have some choices with retirement. That's the thing. People think that they can catch up later. It becomes increasingly difficult. If you could start saving maybe 10% in your 20s for retirement, by your 30s, you might have to save 15 or 20%. By your 40s, you might have to save 20 to 25%. Once you're in your 50s, you'd have to save 40% of your income to match what you would have gotten if you just saved 10% starting in your 20s. So start saving, get those company matches, get those tax breaks, make it a pay-yourself-first kind of proposition, and then work on your debt. So put it in place so that you're saving for retirement first.
you think it's worth it to, say, negotiate a lower payment plan with your loan provider and put a little money away in a retirement account?
If that's what it takes, yes. Extend those, if you have federal student loans especially, get the lower payments by extending it. Now, you can always pay those off early. That doesn't prevent you from doing so. But, you know, you need to get that money into your retirement accounts. I'd say at least 10% more if you can do it. And then use the rest of your money to pay down the debt over time. With student loans, with federal student loans, you're talking about an interest rate of less than 7%. Figure that when you're putting money into your 401k, you're getting a 50 to 100% match for most plans right off the bat. Even if you're not, you're getting a tax break of somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 50%. And then you've got that compounding that we're talking about. So really, it's a slam dunk. Get going on retirement and do the rest of your goals after that.
Let's take another question from a caller. We've got Mike on the line from West Bend, Wisconsin. Hey, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Tell me your situation. I know you've got a bunch of kids. Tell me where you're working, where your retirement money is, and also how old you are.
Okay, I'm 51 years old. I work in the public accounting industry in their finance department. Right now, I've got a retirement fund and a 401k, and it's a managed account. A couple shows ago, I heard a discussion regarding index funds versus managed accounts, their performance, and that really got me interested in, if I chose to go into an index fund, how would I manage that? Would it be one lump sum into a single account, or should I spread that between certain index accounts?
And tell me if I'm right here, your manager's fee is 1.5%, is that correct?
Correct, yep. Management fee about 1.5%. And it runs about $4,000 a year or so. So it's kind of significant.
Yeah, you've got about $250,000 in there. You've got a fair amount of money to work with. I can see Liz moving around in her chair. I know she's got opinions. All right, go ahead, Liz.
Is this advisor detailing your car and doing your taxes and making your estate plan?
No, but probably should be, right?
Yes. I am so glad you're thinking about this now, because here's the thing. Those fees will really get you, and I'm sure that's what you heard in the previous program. Your $250,000, if it was left to grow for 30 years, and let's say the general return was 8%, if you were only paying 1% all in, you would have about $2 million after 30 years. If you're paying an extra percent, so, you know, it's reducing your returns by 2%, you would have $500,000 less after 30 years. That's the impact of those fees. And that's why we need to pay attention. You know, the hand-holding might be nice, but I can't see that it's worth it. If all in, your advisor fee and what you're paying for the underlying investments, if that's over 2%, that's a huge red flag. So, as a background, what you need to know about index funds, you can learn from John Bogle's book. It's called, I think, The Little Book on Investing. He goes through all the reasons why you want low-cost funds. And John Bogle started Vanguard, which is basically the low-cost leader. So I would go to them or to another discount brokerage that you're comfortable with. Look for target date funds. That's one way to do this. If there's a target date fund that invests in index funds, keeps the cost low, that's kind of a no-brainer way to do it. They do all the heavy lifting. They pick the investments. They rebalance over time. Boom. You don't have to worry about it. If you want to do it yourself, you might go to a fee-only planner. You know, pay a couple $100 to come back with a plan for exactly which funds to be invested in. Because basically what you want to do is have the majority of your money in a stock index fund that does a broad match of the market. And then you want a little bit of money in bonds and cash. Again, they're index funds. They just try to match the market. They don't try to beat it. You know, you can pay like less than 1/5 of 1% to get one of those stock index funds. And that's really where you want to be. Don't try to beat the market. Just try to match it.
Mike, do you have more questions for Liz about what you should do with your money, or the next steps you should be taking?
Yeah, I mean, do you move all of that money into all at once, or would you do it over a certain period of time?
You can do it either way. For me, I would get away from those fees as quickly as possible. That's just my orientation and get going. But if you need a little hand-holding doing this, honestly, a couple $100 spent with a fee-only planner. There's a group called the Garrett Planning Network. They charge by the hour.
Sure.
Just to get a roadmap so you can feel more comfortable. Because, you know, that advisor gave you the comfort level of, okay, we're taking care of all of this. Sometimes stepping out on your own is a little scary. So it's nice to have that bridge. And also, also, you need to have a relationship with a financial planner anyway. When you get close to retirement, there's going to be a lot of decisions that you have to make that are basically irreversible. So you want somebody definitely to hold your hand through that.
Thank you.
Mike, thank you so much for listening. It sounds like you're a continuous listener, and we love that. Good
All
luck
right.
to you,
Thanks.
Man. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, Liz, we're gonna turn to Heidi now. She is in San Jose, California. Hi, Heidi.
Hi.
So we've been asking people to talk about their situation and their retirement goals. I know you've got some kids, younger kids, and tell me about where you're saving and then kind of what you want to do once your kids are out of the nest.
Well, I am 44, and my husband is just in his early 50s. We have two young kids. One is almost four, and the other is 5 and a half. And we are trying to save. What we have in like 401ks and 403bs is not substantial. We have about $20,000 there. And I've been saving in a money market account for things like property taxes and extra stuff. And my real question is, well, in addition to that, is my kids are growing out of daycare. And so I'm going to end up saving about $1,400 a month in the next year or two, about $600 this year, and about in a couple years, it'll be about $1,400. And I'm just wondering, what's the best way to handle that? I'm wondering if I can sort of, you can't really make it up, but sort of make up time. Should I be investing in a Roth or, you know, doing, you know, 403B or whatever, you know, I just don't know what to do. I know we're terribly behind in some ways. We have an emergency fund, which we've been really good about. My husband really wants to do something with like an IRA real estate, turn into real estate.
Okay.
He thinks it's more substantial than a, you know, than the stock market itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
I support your concern about real estate. I mean, you just have to watch what's happened nationally. And in California, we've had a few real estate recessions. So it's not a slam dunk. And something people don't seem to realize is that residential real estate has a return about equal to the rate of inflation. And if you factor in the money you pay for maintenance and repairs and all those other things, some people make a go of it. Some people do really well. But if you want to be a landlord, you have to think about, do you really want people calling you at 3 o'clock in the morning? You know, when their sewage backs up into their shower. Or, you know, do you want to have a property manager? Then you have to think about, are you going to be able to diversify those real estate investments? Are you going to be able to buy enough in different states? I mean, you really shouldn't have all your real estate in one place. So that's a concern. Not that real estate's a bad investment, but I would say, first of all, you got to look at taking maximum advantage of those retirement plans. Because again, you get those lovely tax breaks. You're in California, right?
Right.
Yeah. So we have high tax rates here. You want as many tax breaks as you can get. Those 403Bs, 401Ks, whatever, you know, tax deferred retirement you've got, take advantage of. You probably will have additional money that you can, beyond the match, where you could put it into a Roth IRA. And that way you have money in different buckets. You have one that's going to be taxed in retirement, one that's not. So I always recommend that.
So you think she should split it up a little bit?
Well, yeah. Generally, we tell people, do you have a match in your 403B? I should have asked that first.
No, I don't.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Neither does he.
Okay.
He's self-employed, and so his 401K rolled into an IRA, and my 403B is not matched.
Okay. With the self-employment, really quick, go to a CPA, talk about your options, because you have some lovely ones. When you are self-employed,
okay.
You have more options than when you are a W-2. So,
and
go to
Heidi,
the CPA.
What do you do?
I'm a teacher.
You're a teacher.
Oh,
okay.
Do you have a teacher's pension? Are you a public school teacher?
Yes,
Yay.
I am.
Yay. Okay. All right. Good. That's really going to help you because, yes, you are saving for retirement, but teacher's pensions can be really nice. So,
I'm hoping that'll help.
Yeah. No, definitely. And talk to your union or talk to the CalSTRS about what you can expect, because I think that will put your mind a bit at ease. But still, I would get that going with the saving for retirement. That's absolutely where I'd put the money. And I don't know if you heard our previous conversation, but the deal is that you need inflation beating growth. I mean, inflation, even if it just stays at 3%, is going to cut your buying power in half. So it will take you $2 to buy what $1 buys you today. The only way to overcome that historically has been by investing in the stock market. So learn a little bit about it so you get more comfortable. But really, for long-term investing, That's the way to go. And there's something about being in your 40s. You know how fast 20 years goes.
I know. I'm getting a little nervous, actually.
Exactly. This is when it hits. It's like, oh, my God, in 20 years, I'm going to be 64. What am I doing?
Well, I've been thinking about it, actually, since my early 30s. But
good.
With the kids and everything, it's just so much has been going out the door. There's just not been a lot extra other than, you know, we've been able to tuck away for emergencies and things that we could see really, like, immediate.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
Heidi, I have one question for you. When you and your husband talk about retirement, what do you say to one another? What do you envision together?
We would just like to live comfortably and be able to travel on occasion. And when we talk about these things, I think I'm a little bit more concerned about it than he is. I think that he feels that it'll work out. We're just, you know, we're going to make this plan. And I'm kind of like, what's the plan?
Yeah.
So, I need to know this plan. And he's like, well, we're going to work on it and we could do this or we could do that. And I'm like, okay, I need the plan.
Yeah.
And he's really supportive. I think we're both on the same page. It's just, I think that we're coming and we're very fortunate in that we agree on a lot of things in our lives. But I think I'm a little bit more nervous about it mm-hmm. than he is.
Well, and you can be the driver then. You can be the one that says, okay, this is what we've got to do. Usually there is one in a couple, one that's a little more concerned about this stuff and gets it going. So I'm really glad you're thinking about it. This is the time to do it. And again, self-employment is great for retirement planning because there's a lot of different options. So he should be taking advantage of that as well. And I just want to mention that you got two kids to educate or three?
Two.
Okay. When you are on track for retirement, then think about putting aside some money for college savings, like a 529. But make sure you're on track for retirement first.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Good luck.
I so appreciate your help.
Of course. Thank you for calling, Heidi.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, Liz, stay with us. In just a minute, we're going to talk to a listener who has already retired but still needs a little advice. That's next. Liz Weston is with us today, answering your questions about retirement. And our last caller, Liz, is Bob. He is in Chico, California. He retired about 4 years ago. Congrats, Bob. What'd you do before you retired? How old are you? And what are you living off of now?
The whole thing, huh? Okay, I was a school custodian, and so I have PERS and Social Security, and it amounts to about the same thing I made when I was working.
Nice.
That's great.
Well done.
And I'm 66.
Okay. And how long have you been retired?
4 years.
Okay. But you have some, you said you have some savings as well?
Oh, maybe $100,000.
Oh, okay. Wow. Nice. So what's your question?
My question is, when I was working, payroll removed 40% of my check.
Ah.
And everything was done automatically for me.
Yeah.
It included a 403B. Now that I'm retired, I only 10% of my check covers those same obligations.
Okay.
So what do I do with the difference?
So money is piling up on you, huh?
It piles up on me. The first couple of years, I took it out and bought a deferred annuity,
uh-huh.
and that's part of that $100,000.
Okay.
And then the next time it piled up, I bought a car.
Okay.
And then this time I thought I'd call you.
I love your problems. They are problems that
these
people
are
would
good
love to have.
Problems
yes.
to have.
Yes. And I want to make the point that, you know, you've been living on 60% of your income, basically your whole working life. And if more people did that, retirement would be a heck of a lot easier. You know, you would easily go from working life to retired life and you wouldn't have that big drop in income. So because you have those lovely pensions that are indexed to inflation, you know, you don't have to take the same risk that people who don't have those options do. So if you don't want to invest in the stock market, you know, I might still have a few investments there just to make sure that you have money down the road. But really what I would take some of the money that you've got and go talk to a financial planner, those fee-only planners I keep talking about, because they can help you kind of work out what you want your retirement to look like, what you need in terms of money to cover long-term care. Do you have kids?
It's just me. My insurance rep is trying to tell me I should put some of it into long-term care.
Maybe that's the case. The older you get, the more expensive it is. But since it's just you, that's something, again, I would go through a fee-only financial planner first, somebody who can look over the possibilities and give you some advice about the way to go, because long-term care is complicated. They've had a history of raising premiums on people. So you really want to make sure that what you're getting into is something that's sustainable. And that's the kind of thing that most of us need help with. We need an expert to walk us through it.
But it just be a decision of how do I want to spend that much money?
That's the thing. And there's different possibilities. You can pay a monthly payment. You can buy a life insurance policy that has a long-term care rider. I mean, there's a lot of different things. And, you know, you may decide, no, that's not what I want to do. I can just spend down my money and wind up on Medicaid, essentially, and let them pay for it. So it's, you know, if you want home care, if you want higher quality care, then investing in long-term care insurance might be the way to go. If you think, I'm not going to be cognizant anyway, what do I care? Maybe you want to do the Medi-Cal route. So it's, you know, there's a lot of questions and a lot of things that you need to discuss. And again, it really helps to have an expert who's been through this, who can kind of, you know, cut down the weeds for you and show you where the path is.
Okay, you don't have an easy answer.
No easy answer. So, I mean, it's lovely that you have all this money. I'd say travel more and, you know, give it away and do great things. But that this is one area that you probably want to take a look at that might be worth some money.
Okay.
What do you know now about retirement, now that you're on the other side of it, that maybe you wish you knew 20 years ago or you wish other people knew?
Well, it's great.
That's good to hear.
What can I say? just like everybody told me, you know, do it as soon as you can.
Yep. Okay.
You clearly followed those instructions because you've got the room booth. I hope you have lots of really cool, fun adventures planned.
Well, not too many planned, but I've had a lot of adventures.
Good. All right. I really appreciate your calling. Thank you so much, Bob.
Okay, thank you.
Personal finance columnist Liz Weston is the author of several books, including her latest, The 10 Commandments of Money, Survive and Thrive in the New Economy. Liz, thank you so much for answering all these questions.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks, Lizzie.
Make sure you're on the right path to retirement. We have tips for every age at marketplacemoney.org. And tell us about your retirement dreams on our Facebook page. Coming up, the retirement life. Must-see TV style.
I would talk to people about, I'm going to live in an intentional community, and by then they were asleep. So I would say, I'm going to live like the Golden Girls. And then usually the reaction is, really?
Yes, really. And it saves money, too. Plus, retiring with a mortgage. That's all ahead on Marketplace Money from APM. When we talk about retirement, it's not just what you save, but how you save it. What kind of plan you have, one where you put a fixed amount of money in, or one where you get a fixed amount of money out. These different accounts can feel like a maze. So we called up Olivia Mitchell for help. She's a professor at the Wharton School of Business. Thank you for being here.
It's my pleasure.
Let's get basic. What's the difference between a defined contribution plan and a defined benefit plan?
Well, the real simple way to remember it is it's all in the names. So a defined contribution plan is one where the employer defines the contribution he's going to make. That is 6% of your salary or 3% of your salary gets put into an investment fund. It builds up hopefully a lot over time, and then at retirement you get what you get, whatever the investments have earned. In a defined benefit plan, by contrast, the employer specifies what you will get as an income stream the rest of your life, usually as a percentage of your salary.
Is one better than the other?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. It used to be the case that people thought defined benefit was the beginning and end of all pensions. However, defined benefit plans have suffered, especially in the most recent global financial crisis. Many of them are seriously underfunded. By contrast, the defined contribution plan relies more heavily on personalization. In the 401k system, if you leave your employer, you can take the money with you and roll it over into a new pension so you don't leave anything behind.
You've looked at retirement in your research a lot. Are we saving enough as a country? And if we're not, what can we do better?
Well, the saving question is very fraught with disagreement. Some people say, yes, we're not really in any trouble at all. Certainly, compared to the rest of the world, we save much, much less. I'm of the view that investment returns are going to be much lower in the future over the next 20 years than they were over the last 20 years. We're going to have to save a whole lot more. We're going to have to save 30 or 40% of our salaries if we're planning to retire at the traditional early 60s age range.
That's a big number. Most people, I think, have no idea that it would be that much.
Well, indeed, I tried convincing my two daughters, who are in their 20s, that they should save 40% of their salary when they got their first jobs, and I didn't get very far, I confess. I think I got them to 20%. But the point is that the earlier you start saving, then the more time you have for that saving to compound. And so it's absolutely critical. The other thing, of course, is that we have to rethink the meaning of retirement. The notion of quitting at age 55 or 60 or even early 62, say, simply isn't feasible in a world where babies today are going to live to 100 with a very high probability. Indeed, the demographers estimate that the baby has already been born that will live to 200. So the notion of retiring young and living off a little bit of savings is just not feasible anymore.
Let's say that you're 55, and you always assumed that you would be retiring at 70, but you look at your savings and they just don't come even close to what it feels like would be comfortable to retire on. What are your options at that point?
Well, the issue is one of being able to work longer, consume less, and lower expectations, unfortunately. Maybe this is why they call economics the dismal science. One of the things people can do is, instead of retiring completely, they can keep working part-time. In fact, that's something that baby boomers have made very clear they would like to do. Go into new jobs, start a business. Of course, those things are also fraught with risk, but the notion is don't check out. In fact, we know that in countries where people retire very early, they also are in very poor health. That is, there's a feedback effect between continuing to work longer and staying mentally and physically healthy. So it's not all gloom and doom.
Olivia Mitchell is a professor at the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And go to marketplacemoney.org. There you'll find a guide to retirement accounts. Let's say you took all our experts' advice, made a plan, put money away for retirement. What do you do with your house? In many families, it's the biggest asset, and it's also the one that might carry the largest loan. Conventional wisdom has always been pay off the mortgage when you retire. In the Great Recession, millions of people couldn't. Turns out mortgages might not matter so much anymore. Karen Muller is a personal finance columnist with the Star Ledger in New Jersey and is here to tell us why. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me.
Traditional advice has been you don't want to retire with a mortgage. Does that still hold true?
Not necessarily. I mean, the first thing to consider when anybody is coming close to retirement, or if you're in retirement already, you need to decide what you're comfortable with. The conventional wisdom always used to be, oh, you don't want to have any debt at all in retirement. You don't want to have to worry about it. But these days, you know, mortgage rates are so low. And if you need the tax deductions, which you may or you may not in retirement, depending on your personal situation, you know, it's kind of a toss up and well worth sitting down with your tax preparer to look at the specifics for your plan.
Yeah, I looked back at some of the numbers, and in 1989, about a quarter of households retired with a mortgage. And then in 2007, it was like 46%. I was amazed by those numbers.
Yeah, I think that there are probably a couple of different things going on, you know, with the economy, with housing crashes, with the stock market being iffy a few years back, people don't necessarily have as much money as they were planning to. So maybe they couldn't afford to pay off their mortgages. But we're also not talking about 9-10% interest on mortgages either. So they really are more affordable.
Karen, can you run me through a checklist of what people need to consider to think through whether they should keep a mortgage?
Sure. Well, the first thing you need to do is take a look at your overall finances. Take a look at where you have money. Do you have a couple of CDs that would be able to be used to pay off your mortgage? And how much are you earning on that? Chances are today it's not that much. What you don't want to do is take all of your available cash to pay off a mortgage, leaving you with absolutely no safety net. Because then what happens if you need a new roof? Are you going to have to use a credit card to pay for it? I don't think that you want to do that. So, you know, the first thing you need to do is make sure you have the funds available to pay it. The next thing you want to do is to compare interest rates. Take a look at your current mortgage, what you're actually paying, and, you know, remember that you are getting probably some additional tax advantages because of the deductions for mortgage interest. Compare that to the money that you're actually earning on your investments. You also want to make sure to sit down with an advisor, because once you make the move, you're not going to be able to undo it. It could end up pushing you into a higher tax bracket, and you don't want to end up having 1 year where suddenly you're owing thousands of dollars to the IRS.
Retirement is about figuring out how you can pay for the rest of your life, but it's also about relaxing and peace of mind. Where does that fall into this list of what you should do when you think about it?
Peace of mind is really more important than the finances in a case like this, or at least that's what I would say. If you just feel nervous having any kind of debt, whether it's the mortgage or you've got credit cards, if you don't like seeing monthly bills coming in, or if you worry about being able to pay for it, then, you know, you just might be better paying it off. It's the only way to buy peace of mind, really, and it's well worth it.
Karen Muller is a personal finance columnist for the Star Ledger. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Another thing that's changing is where we live in retirement. In this next segment, you can thank someone for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Okay, yeah, fine. That's the Golden Girls theme song. But that model of living, multiple retirees sharing a house, is growing in popularity. Marianne Kilkenny helps women find community living situations, and she also lives in one. And her housemate, Linda Williams, is joining us as well. Marianne, Linda, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Okay, so you might want to murder me here, but it's really, really hard not to draw the Golden Girls analogy. What's your reaction if I say that?
Well, I think it's wonderful because when I first moved to Asheville, I would talk to people about, I'm going to live in an intentional community, and that's why I'm moving from Northern California. And by then they were asleep. So usually I would say, I'm going to live like the Golden Girls. And then usually the reaction is, really? Usually from women.
Marianne, how much do you pay right now to live in this situation?
I pay $900, and that includes the utilities.
A month?
Yes, and I have a separate apartment in the house, and the house is 3,100 square feet.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's certainly a lot cheaper than it would be to live in, say, a full-service retirement community.
Yes, yes. I haven't looked into that, but that's one of the things that probably most people talk about with retirement communities is the upfront cost. There's all different kinds of programs around that. Most people say, you know, the retirement community is very costly, and that's mainly prohibitive, along with some of the other things that you don't really know many of the people that are there.
Tell me about your financial situations and your life situation, where you are in life, Marianne.
Where I am in life is I left a 30-year career in human resources in Silicon Valley. I got out alive, and I felt that that was really wonderful. And I decided I wanted to move to a place that was beautiful and different.
And how old are you?
I'm never going to be able to lie about this again, am I?
Nope.
I'm 63.
Okay. Linda, tell me about your situation.
I'm 66, and I am retired after a 30-year career in education. I then had my own consulting company, so I'm semi-retired.
Marianne, you have built a business on kind of explaining this model to people. When folks hear what you do and how you live, what do they ask you? What do they want to know?
Probably the first thing that they want to know is, how do you have private time? Because they have a feeling, I think, that we're all globbed together like the Golden Girls in the first part of that television program, doing everything together. And that's not the case. We are all very, very busy people. And then they talk about, what happens with your kitties? Can I have a pet? And how noisy is it?
Now, there are some drawbacks here. You don't have the kind of services that you'd have in a traditional retirement community. That's not all available to you guys.
That's right. And having experienced those kinds of things with my parents, I have to say that I'd rather have someone that's taking care of me that I've known for 5 years than someone who doesn't know me at all. So that's the part of mutual support and building these kinds of relationships and communities now in my 60s rather than waiting until my 80s and hoping that someone will take care of me.
If someone is out there listening to this, Linda, and they say, wow, that sounds kind of cool, what do you want them to know? What should they do?
I think they should look into themselves and think about what is it that is really important to me. If it is thinking about the cost, the truth is that's not enough, because it's really about the quality of the relationships with the people with whom you live. And that's what makes it so important for me.
How long are you guys planning to stay in this living situation?
When the leaves fall off and it starts to get a little colder in Asheville. I see Asheville as my second home.
Marianne, what do you see as your future?
I'm planning on being there for, you know, longer term, and I have some other plans to the possibility of moving. It's a continual story, a continuation of this story. It might have an adapted television program other than The Golden Girls.
Marianne Kilkenny and Linda Williams, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
There are more money lessons from The Golden Girls at marketplacemoney.org. And before we end the show, we often get this question. How can I retire early? Well, we found someone who did that and retired at 30. He goes by Mr. Money Mustache. That's the name of his very popular personal finance blog. We'll also call him by his first name, Pete. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks a lot. It is a pleasure to be here.
One of our listeners wrote in on Facebook, how did you do this? How did you do it?
It's really, this is what the blog gets into. It's kind of a mindset of just buying less stuff and not missing it, though. Like, for example, I mean, in our area, Boulder, Colorado, the friends were all buying like the brand new Volkswagen and $100 haircuts and stuff. And we just kept the ways of our youth, which are biking to work and buying groceries from the grocery store. And it just results in you spending, you know, somewhere between half and even a third of what you could otherwise spend with almost the same quality of life.
Explain the equation to me, because there are listeners wondering how they can do this if they want to do it. So explain how much you figured out you needed to save in order to retire.
Yeah. So number one is your time to being, you know, retired or at least able to work a lot less is, it really only depends on your savings rate, how much of your take-home pay that you can keep for yourself as opposed to spending. And if you can save half of your take-home pay, then you're going to be wealthy enough to retire in about 17 years of work. So if you start at age 20, you're all set at age 37. And you can do even better than that if you save more than half. So that's the one thing to remember. The other thing to remember is retirement savings, how much you need. It doesn't depend on your income. You know, it's not a percentage of your income. It's a multiple of your spending. And it turns out you need about 25 times your annual spending saved up, and then you can quit working forever. So if you spend $20,000 a year, you need $500,000 of savings invested in a normal, you know, stock index funds to provide you with income. So just remember those numbers, like 25 times and 50% of your income. And then you can get into it deeper from there, you know, as you read more.
What you chose to do seems like it would be very hard to do for people who are just trying to pay the bills, just trying to get food on the table for their family. Do you think there's some minimum that you need to be making in order to start saving as much as you did?
It's kind of a continuum of skill levels. You know, like if you are starting out with expenses more than your earnings, then you have a long way to go before you should, you know, before you need to start thinking about these giant savings percentages. But, you know, in this position of writing, I actually get to hear from people every day who have done stuff way, way more impressive than my own easy situation. You know, there's people who earn $20,000 supporting a family with three kids and are still saving almost half their income. And they're just, it's all done through creativity. You find a great place, you know, find a neat living arrangement. Maybe you take care of somebody's house in exchange for cheaper rent, get rid of cable TV and drive your car less and ride your bike more.
Separating out the monetary equation, a lot of people really like going to work. What do you say to people who want to be mentally prepared for retirement?
I think you should have something stimulating planned for yourself. I wouldn't suggest that people are just quit their jobs and then have no plan. Like, I'm just going to sit home and sweep the garage after this because it's going to be unsatisfying. People should always have a challenge pretty much in every day of their lives if possible.
Pete blogs at the site MrMoneyMustache.com. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. It was great to be on your show.
And our retirement planning guide continues at marketplacemoney.org. You'll find answers to more of your questions, like how do you calculate how much you'll need? That's it for Marketplace Money this week. You can keep up with us on Twitter at Radio Piggy Bank. Next time in our series on the American Dream, healthcare. The insurance exchanges will open in October. What you need to know about the rollout of this key part of Obamacare. Marketplace Money is produced by Patty Hirsch and Nancy Fargali with Lindsay Foster Thomas and Daryl Perinata. And help this week from Raghu Manavalan. Brendan Willard is our engineer. Deborah Clark is the Marketplace Vice President and Executive Producer of the program. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thanks for being with us. This is APM.